Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. For the second straight episode, our first 30 minutes brings you A War Tale. On Friday, it was Netflix's groundbreaking animation drama of World War II, The Liberator. This time, it's a depiction of the 1973 Yom Kippur War, Valley of Tears, now playing on HBO Max. Co-creator, writer, and executive producer Ron Lesham joins me next. The second annual Omnicultural TV Festival is set to go virtually December 8th. Organizer Kiki Melendez will give us a progress report next half hour, live from the Dominican Republic. And All Arts, the public TV smart TV service dedicated to performing arts, devoted some of its past weekend to Until the Flood, the stage rendering of the 2014 uprising in Ferguson, Missouri. We'll bring you creator and performer Dale Orlando-Smith an hour from now. Also ahead, Andy Cohen prepares a reality TV retrospective, our new classic trivia question, and Requiem for a live event directing heavyweight Walter Miller. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tuner Radio, and presented on iHeartRadio's Podcast Network and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 53 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple, and we welcome you on this Monday afternoon once again to the program all about TV's current and future. First of 2 minute episodes coming your way this week. Great to have you aboard. Good guests coming your way over the next 90, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Not happy with the phone? No problem. We got a chat room for you, and it's a great way to communicate with us. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others in a very simple way. Use Facebook Timeline. Just click on the speaker, the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn icon, and just follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. It's just that simple. And Ron Lesham will be simple with us from Boston after these news notes. Andy Cohen has a new project underway, this one for Bravo sister channel E! The Watch What Happens Live Master of Late Night executive produced For Real, a 7-part retrospective on unscripted television using a mix of iconic moments and interviews with unscripted subjects. Each episode will cover a particular series or theme. Industry producers and journalists will also be interviewed. For Real is planned for an early 2021 start on E! Now, if you have Amazon Fire Television, or TV, HBO Max will be running your way tomorrow, if you want to get it by subscription. After 6 months of existence, Amazon and HBO Max have reached a distribution deal. That leaves Roku as the only smart TV device or product not carrying HBO Max. No word about negotiations for clearance on Roku. Now some quickies. Esports competitions are now recurring content on LX, NBC Universal's smart TV news information service, reaching adults 18 to 45. Alfred Hitchcock's classic movie thriller, Dial M for Murder. Remember that was his big attempt at 3D? Well, it's getting a TV series treatment at MGM UA TV, including or involving Emmy winner Boardwalk Empire creator Terrence Winter and actress Alicia Vikander. Apple TV Plus will start its next original docuseries, Earth at Night in Color, December 4th. Tom Hiddleston narrates. NBC Sports Network will present this year's NASCAR Awards Wednesday night. Separately, ESPN's annual Heisman Trophy ceremony, usually held here in New York, will take place January 5th instead of early December. Both events will be conducted virtually. The Heisman will be from ESPN Studios in Bristol, Connecticut. And Ovation Television will carry all 3 seasons of Crossing Lines, the crime procedural from the last decade, co-starring Donald Sutherland. Season 1, which ran NBC in 2013, will begin December 7th and unfold in 3-hour blocks, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. The series ran from 2013 to 2016. And that is news notes for today. Our first guest, as a writer, as a producer, as an entrepreneur, is one of the great people involved in Israeli television. Among his credits, he was one of the key people behind Prisoners of War, the Keshet format that later became the award-winning Showtime series, Homeland. He is also the executive producer of another series that made its way from Israel to here in the United States via HBO, Euphoria, which won Zendaya the Emmy Award earlier this year for Best Actress in a Drama. And now he's involved in a series that has taken a while to produce called Valley of Tears. It started last week on HBO Max, getting great reviews, and he just signed a deal late last week to start another series in production. Joining us live from Boston, Ron Lesham. Ron, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Simon. Great to be here.
Tell us about Valley of Tears. When did you first decide you wanted to do a depiction of the 1973 Yom Kippur War?
So we've been working on the series for 10 years, and strangely enough, this war that changed the Middle East and changed Israel forever and is our biggest trauma was never been told on television drama. So it was, for us, it was a kind of a life mission. And the strength, and it was impossible for technical reasons, for budget reasons. Eventually, now we have the largest show ever made in Israel. That's why we were fighting for 10 years to create this. But in, also in a strange way, all of us, mostly, I think, all of us, are as writers, as Israeli writers, we're constantly working abroad. We're working in Europe. We're working in Korea. Israel has such tiny budgets. So for the past 10 years, I was really waiting for the moment where we can go back home, let's say, and create this challenging one. And in a sense, it was, it's not only the technical difficulties which we had, but just imagine we were filming on the Syrian border where a civil war is still going on. And from time to time, we had to, hold, for 3 weeks, hold us shooting, because of missiles and rockets being fired from the other side, from that tragedy and so many other difficulties. But emotionally, this is unlike the Americans and the American culture with Vietnam. We as Israeli culture, we have so many forgotten wars that we never talk about. Maybe that it's because we're living from a war to a war. So basically, we never told this one, which is our biggest trauma for each of us and our families.
And when you finally got the go-ahead to pursue this, what did you want to say in this docudrama about this war and its impact on Israel?
So I say this, like, cinematically, the one thing that was super important for us, because we grew up on such incredible American war films, all of them, and we wanted to make sure that the voices that we're bringing to the series as a war series are going to be really different and unique and tragedy. I mean, conflicts and dilemmas that you haven't seen on other war films. We're not trying to imitate Thin Red Line or River Kwai or whatever. We were Saving Private Ryan. We wanted to have this unique dilemmas and conflict that you only have in that war and in the really crazy realities that we're handling in Israel with. But we also, it was more of a national reckoning for us, more than just, it's not a war story. It's the Israeli society trying to face its sins and its arrogancy and its blindness sometimes. It was more of about the Israeli society. And the moment we decided to start writing this show was a moment where we found a speech by a young officer who, after the worst battle of all, told his platoon, "Listen, guys, after all the scenes we had and after all the arrogancy we had, after all that we've suffered here, I can promise you for sure one thing, that we're going to be a better people, better society, a better country." And we wanted to kind of, on a timely, as a timely narrative, just to check ourselves, to ask ourselves, are we fulfilling this promise that we've made? And there's so much in that war, because it's a thriller and it's a war that, you know, the series itself is just 4 days. The 10 episodes are just really intense 4 days when a war falls on you by surprise. But there's so many timely themes that we were trying to talk about. Even the fact that we were blinded by, you know, we trusted our leaders and we were wrong. We were blind to warning signs, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I believe we have a call, Ron. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televise. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Exacto, con la página que van direccionando.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi, it's Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest, Ron Lesham? I guess not. All right, and thank you for making the call. Ron, it seems like your program and The Liberator that we covered on Netflix on Friday had a similar situation where their show was originally going to be a live-action depiction of World War II for the History Channel. It was going to be 8 hours, and they decided to turn it into a four-hour animation program because they saw that the budget could not be affordable for what they wanted to do. And they turned to an Atlanta animation house called Trioscope to make it happen. I understand that a similar situation happened with your program where because of the – even though you spent something like $1 million an episode, there were certain things that you could not do because of the scope of what you wanted to portray, that I understand you did some computer effects. Tell us how you used computer effects to get your points across and to establish the scope of your piece.
So to be honest, usually our budget per episode is smaller than the budget that we have in the U.S. for refreshments on set. We have no money to produce. It's insane. But and there are a lot of talented people when it comes to visual effects working in Israel, and there are great talents that are working to the U.S., like working for Marvel and working for Pixar, but living in Tel Aviv. But they never had the opportunity to create for the Israeli drama, Israeli screen, because we never used visual effects, CGI, VFX. And here that was this show, because we had a $1 million per episode, which usually usually we create shows at around 150K per episode. Now we had 1 million per episode, which makes it the biggest show ever made in Israel. But we, for the first time, we had the opportunity to use visual effects. And we needed that for so many reasons. I would just mention one. I mean, we had to use we wanted to find tanks from 1973. But it was impossible. But all these tanks retired and were destroyed 20 years ago. Now, we were trying to buy tanks in the U.S. because in the U.S. there are people who would sell you a tank for 40K or 80K. They have tanks on their backyards and they collect tanks. I don't know. But we couldn't. We found them on Craigslist, but we couldn't ship it to Israel because the Israeli law is strictly forbidding you from importing tanks, even for shooting purposes. It was impossible to find any. So we only had two tanks on the Israeli side, one tank on the Syrian side, and we needed hundreds. So it was just one example for why we needed, and it took 10 years to find the moment where we are capable of using visual effects. And so that was a lot of the process, but the process was also, you know, emotionally we were touching subjects that in the Israeli society, there are things that you never talk about at home. I'm not comparing at all, but it's like when we grew up, it was impossible to talk about the Holocaust at home. It was forbidden. You would never ask your grandmother or grandfather anything. So even just trying to find the partners to create these shows, everyone felt like, okay, it's a trauma. We don't talk here about trauma. So it's always the technical issues were small in comparison to the emotional complexity of it.
Mm-hmm. Ron Lesham is the co-creator, writer, and executive producer of Valley of Tears, the brand new drama about the 1973 Yom Kippur War. It's now running in its U.S. premiere on HBO Max. And Ron joins us live from Boston this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. We are south of where he is, 53 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple. And we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we'll introduce you to two ventures that may become two of the most important ventures next year. The first is called Global Environmental Media, and they want to put together not one but more than one programming service dealing with solutions to environmental issues around the world. We'll talk to three of the co-founders, Christian Moore, Vincent Rozier, and Michael Clemente. Then we'll find out about an interactive venture that is starting to make its way to smart TV sets and devices. It's called Seize the Show. We'll speak with the chief executive officer of that project, who joined us live from upstate New York. His name is David Carpenter. If the last name sounds familiar, he does have a connection to one of the most famous TV theme music composers. More about that coming up on Friday's episode. And finally, Netflix last week premiered one of its first holiday movies of the season, A New York Christmas Wedding. You'll meet the producer, writer, and star of that film, Otoja Abit. All Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Ron, what kind of feedback are you getting from HBO Max viewers about Valley of Tears?
So we just launched this weekend, so it's thrilling to hear. When we wrote this, it was such a, as I said, it was kind of a national reckoning for ourselves. We never imagined the foreign viewers, but now HBO Max and HBO worldwide, in Europe, in Asia, and East Europe, are starting to react, and we see how, in a sense, cosmopolitan and globalized the themes are, and it's. So we started when the show was launched in Israel a month ago. The crazy thing that happened is not only we broke all rating records for the public broadcasters and the VOD rating records, and that was thrilling. But at the same time, the more important thing for us was the fact that we realized how it turned into a kind of an event where we have hundreds of thousands of people online on the social media groups talking about their memories from the war. Kids from the age of 12 to 20 are sharing stories about how their parents and grandparents cried for the first time or told their stories for the first time. So it became, and it is in a sense, it touches a lot of exposed nerve ending that makes everyone so involved in checking every details and arguing about every detail in the show. It is kind of a high volume. And now we're hearing this just before our call, I got a message from Czech Republic and from Lisbon, and but people are reacting in such a different interpretation to the story. But the one thing that I really loved to hear as a kind of a feedback was we have in the show, we have a nerdy intelligence officer who is based on Amit's, my writing partner, on his father kind of, but also on us, because we started Amit and I we ride together now for 25 years, but we met in the military. We were both serving in a tapping unit, kind of the Israeli NSA, that is called A200, and maybe this is even where we learn how to write a drama, because when you're tapping to someone else's phone lines, you know him better than he knows himself, because you not only hear how he talks to all his people, all his relatives, friends, whatever, but you also hear how they speak of him behind his back. And in a way, this guy, and it's a real story, but there were a few like him, was trying to shout to the commanders and to the leaders, you are wrong, you are missing, a disaster is coming, and everyone is blind to it. And no one is listening to him. And that's, of course, from the Yom Kippur War, it's a true story. But when I'm getting the first feedbacks, we're all talking about this nerdy guy and about how timely it is when we are blind to warning signs, and it can be related to global warming or climate changes or democracies collapsing worldwide or whatever. But the idea of how we are blind and how we are trusting our leaders, how we are trying to shout you are wrong, or we don't know how to shout you're wrong, this is something that is that is always out there when people react to the show, as well as the intensity. It's a very, because we're telling four days of a war, everything, it's like almost minute by minute, but totally intense.
This program is coming out at a very special time for Israel, because we're seeing some of its Arab neighbors make peace with that country. The United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, others may be jumping aboard because of the recent peace treaties that have been signed. Do you hope that those countries will ultimately have a chance to see this program, your program?
Totally, and it was quicker than we thought. We were last week. We were invited to an event, online event, with Dubai and Saudi Arabia. We still don't have a peace treaty between Israel and Saudi Arabia. We have with a few other shows, but they invited us to a panel to talk about the show, and so many of them watched it prior to the call. And over the past month, we've been getting so many offers for collaborations, co-productions, whatever you can imagine, from the Emirates and from Saudi Arabia, from all over the Middle East, and we are creating. We even have Amit and I are launching a show called No Man's Land on Hulu, which is a co-production with an OSN original, which is a Middle Eastern Arab cable network. That airs from Dubai, but you can watch it all over the Middle East, including Saudi Arabia. So basically, I think these are really interesting times. And because they, in a sense, the crazy thing about television today is that the U.S., of course, is still creating, Hollywood is creating shows for 196 territories so successfully. And it's always American shows trying to being watched in 196 territories. Other writers worldwide, if you are a Japanese writer or a Swedish writer, you will never really had the urge to go out of your territory. Usually you won't be trying as a Swedish writer to write a show to Asia. You would try to just to create your own more intimate show for the Swedish audience. But what is unique about the Israeli writers and producers, because we don't have budgets, because we are so tiny, we're smaller than New Jersey, we are creating a lot of shows internationally and co-productions. And as I mentioned, we created shows in Korea. We don't even speak the language, but we are creating dramas that are always kind of co-productions. And we always invite people who speak 10 languages to produce with us and filmmakers from 10 countries. And I think what we hear from our Arab friends in the recent year was how much they want to collaborate on that, be a part of the globalization of this industry, of the drama, the small village of drama creators and filmmakers worldwide.
You can hear more about No Man's Land, which is playing on Hulu, because of our interview last month with producer Maria Feldman. If you want to check that out, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out our podcast sites. Ron Lesham is with us from Valley of Tears, now on HBO Max. He's also the executive producer of Euphoria, the Emmy Award-winning series that won that Emmy for Zendaya's performance. We'll talk about that and this brand-new writing producing deal coming up in our next part of our conversation. Ron joins us live from Boston this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Adam with you live from New York, and we invite you to be part of a conversation in our remaining moments with Ron. So give the call, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, next week is our annual Thanksgiving week trio of episodes, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And on Monday, we have a 90-minute episode for you. We're going to showcase two new networks. One is called the Able Channel. It's a health and well-being service whose founders include the former head of Time Warner, Jerry Levin. We'll speak with Brian McCourt. He is the founder and chief executive officer of that service. And then you'll meet Kathleen Burns, whose production company, Cabana 512, is involved with another new service dealing with the world of psychic phenomena and the paranormal. They call it the Dead Zone Network. And you'll speak with Kathleen on our program Monday. Plus, we'll introduce you to a producer on the popular series Married at First Sight who's getting into science fiction writing. Her name is Alicia Godmash. And that's all coming up Monday, first of our three Thanksgiving week episodes, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Ron, your reaction to Euphoria and especially the Zendaya Emmy win. That had to be a really terrific thrill.
Yeah, and you know, especially because we were fighting to create this show in the U.S. For 6 years, and we got no really like aggressive no's from 20 networks, I think, and platforms. It was almost impossible to convince someone to believe in it. And when Sam Levinson, who's so brilliant and not only a brilliant filmmaker but also brought himself deep into this, everything in the show, he's completely like the soul and blood and flesh and blood of Sam Levinson. When we found him as a composer and leader and filmmaker here, and when we found the open heart of HBO and Casey Blois and Francesca and everyone there, and we got after 6 years of struggling to convince that there is a tone here that is new and fresh and relevant that it might work. So the moment that these guys were able to create a new voice of it, was I think one of the most important moments, not only in my career, maybe in my life, because I was always dreaming of creating this kind of tone and look and feel in many aspects. Because when we are in the U.S., when we approach, when we enter a room full of executives, they will always ask us, okay, what's your next espionage show? What's your next war story? Because we come from the Middle East, so they assume this is the only thing we know how to write. And as a kid and as a teenager and a filmmaker, I was always dreaming of writing the kind of, let's call it the Gus Van Sant meet Trainspotting, the kids, the elephant type of a tone, and to reinvent it in a sense. And I think Sam Levinson gave us the gift of recreating it in the U.S. And again, it brings us to the problem that we have in Israel, because when we wrote the Israeli version of Euphoria in 2012, we only had the budget to film 20 scenes per episode. Now, when you want to create the short attention of this age of 17, you can't do that with 20 scenes per episode. You need 100 scenes per episode. So it was even impossible when it comes to this, to the rhythm of it. So I think it's a huge gift. And just watching Sam recreates it and creates it and bring his interpretation and everything is just fascinating.
Ron, we only have a minute left. Tell us about the deal that you signed last week to put a new series together. What will that be about, and when will you start working on it?
So we've been working for a long time with West End Films, who are based in London, but they create the most incredible films and TV in Israel as well. And now we're joining West End Films together with Anton Capital, who are a major force in the UK and Europe. They back up from the BBC to French production companies like Federation and others. And we're trying to work with them to create a kind of a lab for voices and talents and in the drama field. Personally, Amit, my partner, and I are going to write their crime thriller. And it's going to be American and globalized at the same time. So it's really exciting.
And I'm looking forward to hearing what comes out of that. It's a very, very exciting project. We learned about it late last week through Deadline and Hollywood Reporter and other places. I have a hunch it's going to be very, very special. In the meantime, Valley of Tears, you can catch it now on HBO Max. It's a terrific war drama, and much more than just a war drama, I might add, too. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.hbomax.com, www.hbomax.com. And coming up next month, a special edition of Euphoria. And there's another special edition that will happen before the second season here in the United States begins on HBO sometime in 2021. So do check it out. We will keep you posted. Ron Lesham, thank you again very much for coming aboard. Congratulations on all your work, not just, by the way, with Valley of Tears, but also Euphoria, and when you were with Keshet with Homeland. And congratulations on the great success it had with Showtime in the U.S. version with Claire Danes. It was a marvelous show, Emmy Award-winning, other great awards, and all the best, by the way, all the great filmmakers and video makers who are making Israeli television very, very special, not only in your country, but also across the world. It's been delightful having you on. And
thanks
you all
so
the
much.
Best.
Thanks for everything.
You're welcome.
Talk soon.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Ron Lesham from Valley of Tears joining us live from Boston. More Tomorrow Be Televised coming up, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you looking for a very inspiring book, particularly now around this time of year? Holiday season is beginning next week with Thanksgiving. Well, I got one for you, and you can get it right now with a trial run to Audible.com. It's by David Goggins, a very, very special soldier. It's called Can't Hurt Me, and he's someone who has become a Navy SEAL and so much more. He tells all about it in this amazing audio book. And as I said, you can get it right now with a one-month trial to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider, absolutely, of spoken digital entertainment, information, inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and iHeartRadio. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook and 1 month trial and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Get this. If you're already an Amazon Prime member, it's two audiobooks you can get for the trial of one. And one of those books could be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's everything from original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and, of course, great one-woman and one-man performances. So what are you waiting for? How about making this holiday season the season that you or somebody else that you know gets the gift of Audible.com, the gift of transforming the way you or they hear the world. For that one-month trial, one-to audiobooks, and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in the next half hour, Kiki Melendez, our very good friend, joins us. Her annual Omnicultural TV Festival is a few weeks away virtually from Los Angeles. She'll speak to us live from the Dominican Republic, plus our new classic trivia question of the week in honor of Alan Arkin. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You connect to the best audio on the planet. It's www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tuneinradio.com. Remember, they reach more than 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And don't forget, tonight at 9:10 Eastern Pacific, check out some wonderful music from up-and-coming artists on the Indie Artist Radio Show. That's the Indie Artist Radio Show tonight, 9:10 Eastern, 6:10 Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best VTR comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition, opening up your week of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Avon with you live from New York through very shortly. And when she does, you can give her a call at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. My next guest is the creator of the annual Omnicultural TV Festival. It's another way that people of color can get their pilots, whether it's scripted, unscripted, talk variety, whatever, getting a showcase. The showcase was in Los Angeles last year. This year, it is virtual, but also originating from L.A., with support from NAPI, the TV Filming Trade Association. Joining us live from the Dominican Republic at a resort called Punta Canta is the organizer of Omnicultural TV Fest, Kiki Melendez. Kiki, welcome back.
How are you? Can you hear me?
You are coming through loud and clear. It's great to have you here. Tell us about where you're from and why you're there in the Dominican Republic this week.
Well, Punta Cana is a beautiful luxury resort of my country. It's very safe here, thank God. And you know, we are observing all the rules and regulations of COVID. And also, I'm here in pre-production of a movie and a TV special, which is called Broads Abroad. And it's about comedians, you know, kind of fish out of water, traveling to try to get an audience. It's hilarious. It's with some of the winners from America's Got Talent. And from here, we're also producing Omnicultural TV Fest 2020. We're so excited because, by the way, this is an exclusive. You have an exclusive here. We're doing it populated with avatar technology. So people will still be able to meet each other, network with each other, ask questions at panels. They will create their own little avatar prior to the event, and then they will basically go into the Omni world. They will be able to go into the screening rooms and watch the different screenings. The schedules will be available to them. And then they can go to a panel. For example, we have, you know, Give Me a Break panel, which is about the resources available in different countries when you want to shoot, how you get breaks, tax breaks in Britain and Dominican Republic and Atlanta, Georgia, California. Then we have, like, worldwide distribution, how to get your projects out into the world. And we have a Pitch Perfect panel with Stacey Levine from MGM, Steve Berkowitz, Roy Ashton from Gersh, so many people, Stephen Barr from TVNZ, and Kat Rodriguez from Lifetime Television, as well as some people from Viacom and CBS. So it'll teach you how to break into the business, how to pitch your projects and get it sold. And we also have writing for television, navigating production in a COVID world. That's going to be such an interesting panel because it's going to tell us how Hollywood has had to change so many things after COVID and how, you know, how the whole industry has changed during this time. So anyway, we have lots of panels like that. One of my exciting ones is Celebrating Diversity with Cindy Cowan. And what I did, you know, in Hollywood, like Latinos and the minority were always complaining about not having enough opportunities. So what I did was I'm celebrating those people that are working, like Sherry Belafonte, who's on The Morning Show, you know, Isabel Blake Thomas, London Brown, Yvette Nicole Brown, Richard Gant, Kelly Hugh, Martha Gonzalez, Tiny Lister, Jimmy Jean-Louis, Rob Mays, Rene Rosado, who's on The Conners, Sal Velez Jr., who's on Netflix in Black Summer and others. So all these actors are working actors every day on TV, and or not every day, but you see them on regular shows. And I wanted to celebrate that all the people that are working. And so that is a super, super cool panel that I always do every year. And it was so funny because last year we had about 6 celebrities, and this year we have 10 celebrities that came on board. So it's going to be an exciting, exciting event. I'm very, you know, very eager because this is an opportunity for people to actually meet each other in this horrible time we're going through. You know, you could still network. You could still click on somebody and say, hey, I want to talk to you. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Kiki, and I want to go back to what you're going to be doing more with this particular festival and your thoughts also about what seems to be a tremendous push for diversity this year. But go back first to your first festival last year. What came out of that? Did anybody get a deal? Did anybody get a break in terms of working with a particular network or a service to get them off the ground?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the winner of our comedy special got a distribution deal with the nacelle company, Comedy Dynamics. There was movies sold to Amazon Prime. There was a couple of shows and shorts sold to Shorts TV. Maverick Entertainment made deals to a couple of our projects. So it's actually, to be honest with you, it was a very successful. I am guesstimating from the projects that I personally know, 8 have definitely moved forward, have gotten distribution, have sold, and have had a deal from the first one. I don't know if you know this, but in Hollywood we always say it is easier to win the lottery. It is easier to win the lottery than to put a show on the air. So to do 8 is pretty good for my first year because nobody even knew about the festival. So that makes me feel so proud. I am so grateful to everybody that supports us, to all the companies that support us. And I really hope that people see how great this is for our emerging producers. There is such great talent out there, and nobody, they have such a hard time getting a break or showing it to the right people. So to create, you know, an event like this where we're actually showing great product from emerging producers is so exciting, and every network should get behind it and every outlet should get behind it because I saw all the projects this year that we are showcasing. The selections are superb. I mean, I am so proud of what we have to show this year.
Yeah. Kiki, size up where we are at between then and now. Two things seem to be popping up. First of all, one thing is that we are seeing more opportunities to get into the field, especially for first-timers in series creation together. It's been everything from The Blacklist, working with more organizations than before to get scripts turned into series. You have CBS making a deal with the NAACP for promoting infrastructure. Paramount is going to be CBS, Viacom CBS is going to be doing 100 made-for-TV movies over this next year. 50 of them are going to have feature first-time directors, mostly directors of color. They're going to work with people like the folks you mentioned, like John Luziamo, like Courtney B. Vance, and their various production companies to make sure that there is diversity in the cast and the crew. You also have projects like Torrance Acevedo's Latinx Content Lab that was set up a few months ago at Universal Content Productions. You've got more people of color now becoming executives at everywhere from Warner Media to Netflix to NBC Universal. And on the other side, you have all these new networks that are using smart TV sets and smart devices to get distribution, to get clearance. Many of them, all of them from independent players. Many of these covered on this program over the last 5-6 months. And many of them are from people of color. And in fact, we have a bunch of companies like Cinedigm that are going to be launching a multicultural network of scripted and unscripted television, originals, in the next couple of months. It just seems that there's a momentum going over this last year, despite the pandemic, to try to get more diversity in the media.
Yes, I do agree. I agree with you 100%. It's about time. We know that it's coming, that it was coming. And it's a great, you know, great time because, you know, we, the independent producers, we produce, you know, with so much love and so much passion because we don't have, not, you know, 90% of the times we don't have the money to do it. You know, so we do it with so much love and so much passion. And I think that they're realizing that the distributors, the networks and studios are realizing there is a wealth of content out there. There is a wealth of talent out there, and they just have to put some energy into developing it, you know?
Yeah. Our good friend Kiki Melendez is joining us live from the Punta Canal Resort in the Dominican Republic, our first ever guest from there, by the way. And we're talking about the Omnicultural TV Festival that she has put together, and it will be in its second version, virtual version, from Los Angeles on December 8th. She's live with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We want to hear from you, so give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up later this half hour, near the top of the hour, we have our classic trivia question of the week. We have a very special DVD prize in store for you if you're first with the correct answer, so stay tuned. Get your thinking caps ready because you could be our second weekly winner in a row. Kiki, I know that you did have to move your venture this year back. You were going to do it in April and May of this year. You moved it back. How have you tried to keep everything together despite the pandemic?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the first part of the question.
I know that you had to move your 2020 edition from this spring to December, and I'm curious how you were able to keep things going, keep the momentum going, make sure that you were able to get the product together in time for the rescheduled date.
Well, to be honest with you, it was devastating because we had the most amazing event planned. We had the Directors Guild that we had already confirmed, and we had everything set. It was so exciting. We had a whole bunch of sponsors. It was really, really going to be huge this year. And so I had to rethink. Obviously, we couldn't do it. And I had all this great content. And I said, I have to do this for the filmmakers, especially at a time like this when we all need hope and we all need something to look forward to. And I know they put a lot of in their, I don't know how to explain it, a lot of hope into Omni. You know, I know that they were really looking forward to showcasing their work with Omni. So when this opportunity with Stream World, which is a nonprofit educational organization, came to my attention about being able to do something where people can still interact with each other and they can do it from sort of their home with a population of, with, you know, avatar populated technology, I was like, wow, you know, this is what I have to do. I have to do it this way. And I am so grateful because I have, for example, James Maslow from Big Time Rush in Nickelodeon. He's also a rock star. And Kool and the Gang are going to be performing at our after party. So this is going to be so cute to see, like, to see them on the screen performing from their homes. And then you're going to see their little avatar taking a bow on stage. You know what I mean? So I'm so excited about that. And
by the way, Kiki, when do you decide to do the avatar? You're the first event I know of that is trying avatar technology out. How did you think of it?
I freaking love it. It's so cool. I'm just, the only thing I'm worried about, to be honest with you, is that a lot of us are not technologically advanced, you know what I'm saying? But it is so easy. Like, you literally move your avatar with the arrow going up, you move it to the side, you move it up. I mean, it's like almost like driving, you know what I mean? And so I'm just – but it's a little bit like you have to wrap your head around it, but once you get the hang of it, you know, that's why we're telling everybody to sign up in advance and build their avatar so the day of the festival they just walk right in. You know what I mean? So we're going to be promoting that. And, but it feels so weird because once you get in there, like once you're in there and you're seeing yourself walking around, you know what I mean? It's such a great. You know, it was so funny because I went to a meeting in the world. They call it the world, you know, the Stream World. So I went to a meeting, and we're trying it every week. As a matter of fact, there's a meeting now that I was supposed to be at. And we go in there and we sit. And then after I sit down, I go, wait a minute, I can't see myself now. And they're like, well, you can't, when you sit somewhere, right, when you're looking ahead, you can't see yourself, right, anymore. So it's kind of weird, But it's really cool. And I just pray that we can make it work, because this is going to be huge. This is going to be such a huge impact on the way things are done. I wanted to do Omni where people can talk to each other and network with each other and communicate with each other. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I got an email today. I'm going to be attending a special multicultural content event here in New York State that was put together on the fly by the Motion Picture Association of America in conjunction with a number of various sponsors. And they really put something very interesting together with key people from Warner Media, NBC Universal, Netflix's head of virtual film, and so forth. And I want to congratulate them for doing it. It came out of the blue. And I think it's going to be a really wonderful thing. And again, it ties in with your event as well. By the way, talk about the role of NAPI. NAPI is now your partner in this. How have they supported you?
Well, I am very, very, very lucky to have them. The way they support is that, we are partners. They help me to get the buyers to attend. They help me by, marketing the project to all of the buyers and the network executives. And they give away free NAPI tickets, to the big conference every year to the winners category. So they get to go to NAPI, which is very expensive for a filmmaker to be able to go. So we get all that from our partnership. And they're happy with the results so far, because have a 5-star festival rating, which is pretty hard to do in the first year.
That's amazing. Kiki Melendez is with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, and she is live from the Dominican Republic at the Punta Cana Resort. She's getting ready for the second annual Omnicultural TV Festival, co-produced with NAPI, the TV Programming Trade Association, that does their annual event from Miami Beach. It will be virtual this year, I'm sure, this coming January. And the festival, by the way, will be taking place all in one day on December 8th with Avatars for the very first time. If you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with Kiki, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Don't forget, next week, our annual triplet of Thanksgiving week shows, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all at this very hour. And on Tuesday, we'll have the executive producer of a new Crackle series called Breaking Beauty. His name is Rob Hess. He's also working on a service called Only Good TV. It involves Marisol Castro, the former weather person reporter at Good Morning America. Those of you in New York may remember her from the WB11 Morning News. She was the traffic reporter there. And Only Good TV, which is part of what this company is doing, may end up being, I think, a new smart TV programming service next year. We'll find out when we talk to executive producer Rob Heck. That's next Tuesday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Kiki, are there any new TV series that become favorites of yours, especially because they give women of color an opportunity, or because they give actors of color, a great forum to be showcased?
I'm sorry, what was the question? The first part of the question?
Are there any TV series that you've come to enjoy because they give people of color an opportunity to create, write, and direct? For example, one show that comes to mind for me, and we featured on this program a few months ago, is P-Valley, the Starz drama with Breonna Evans, put together by Katori Hall, the playwright that is done out of the South, which deals with the whole world of pole dancing at a nightclub. And it's an amazing series. And Breonna Evans, we had the show, who is the star, is one of the breakout talents of this year. So I was wondering if there's any shows like that or others you've seen that you're very, very high on.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that the shows right now are very well. There's a lot of diversity. Like, I remember when I started the Hot Tamales Live on, I started doing stage, doing the shows on stage, and so many people were like, oh, you have to just do Latinas. You can't mix everybody together. And I said, no, we have to do it that way, because that is what America is. We are white, we are black, we are Asian, we are every race. And we cannot just keep, excluding. I'm all about including everybody. And so But there's shows now I see almost, you know, so many shows. This I started doing that in 1998, 99, and all of a sudden there are so many shows. They all have so much diversity now. I feel like people are getting it. You know what I mean? We are not one color anymore. You know, we are all colors. And so I feel like a lot of the shows are reflecting that, especially the new ones, you know, the newer ones. And so I'm very proud of the way that it's going. I just, you know, obviously want more opportunities for everybody, for emerging producers and for people just getting out, you know, getting out. But yes, I think that things are moving cool. And I think that the new shows that are you know, out there now are really proving that diversity is, you know, it's going somewhere. It's getting better.
Yeah. You have a wide variety of pilots that are going to be showcased in December at your festival. Comedy, drama, reality, unscripted, talk variety, et cetera. Are there any that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I am, but because we are an award festival, I can't really play favorites, even though I'm not a judge. I have a panel of industry professionals that judge all of our content for the award ceremony. So I don't like to play favorites, but yes, there are a lot of really great, great content. As a matter of fact, if you're selected, you're great, because we don't select, you know, we are really strict about the selection. We want to make sure that it's something that is executed well, that it's well lit, it's well produced, the acting is good, the storylines, you know, are interesting and captivating and original. So, you know, we don't just accept everybody, and we had hundreds of submissions, and we, out of the hundreds, we only selected approximately, I think it was 60 to 64. So, you know, all the selections are really good. But I get excited about the fact that we have such a diverse, like, for example, just to give you an example of the diversity we have a beautiful project. It's a documentary about the Armenia, you know, the war in Armenia and how the people handle it, how the people survive it, and how they are still, their spirit is so, you know, so empowering to see them go through such atrocities and still be dancing in the streets and celebrating life. Then we have one called Mambo Cella, which is about the history of mambo music, and it's shot in Cuba, you know. So that is how far we go. We go from one extreme to another. It's very international. There is a British submission called December, which is about the last pandemic that we had, and it was how this doctor was fighting to try to get help to save the people, which is kind of like what we're going through now. And so there's a lot of amazing projects and lots of sitcoms. We have one called Hialeah, you know, that's really funny. So there's a lot of great projects that I'm very excited to showcase through our platform.
Kiki, before we go, assuming that this spring we make the transition from being in a pandemic to being in whatever the next normal is going to be, how do you want to expand year three of the festival in 2021? And also, are you thinking about maybe doing, let's say, an event in New York, an event in Chicago, an event in Miami or in Texas, or expanding the outreach to other places in, let's say, a talent search or special showcases?
Well, we're getting to the point where Omni is kind of international. This year we had projects from Canada, Ireland, you know, Britain, Brazil, Portugal, Spain. So we're becoming a very sort of international festival. And my dream would be, believe it or not, to do it from Punta Cana. Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, it's a luxury destination. It's beautiful. It's safe. It's they do the PGA tour here, you know, the PGA golf tour. So I would love it. That would be a dream if I could do it from here, because I know that it would be a huge success. And I would also definitely love to do it in LA and expand it to Europe. I mean, that would be a dream. but I'm telling you, it's so much work. I don't know if I could do more than one. Oh, my God, so much work.
Mm-hmm. But luckily, a lot of people are supporting you for it, Kiki, such as Nappy, such as some of the other talents you've got lined up as sponsors, and, of course, all the series creators who are all looking for a break. And I want you to know, Kiki, that whichever contenders in this year's festival come out with deals, we would love to have them on this program. They're welcome to come on as soon as they make the deal and they know what network or service they can be on. We would love to have them. For all you out there, remember, the second annual Omni Cultural TV. You have it, absolutely. Again, the second annual Omni Cultural TV Festival, sponsored by NAPI, the TV industry promoting organization, takes place on December 8th virtually. If you want more details on how you can participate, here's where you go. Online, www.omniculturaltvfest.com. That's www.omniculturaltvfest.com. Avatars for the very first time. A very exciting lineup of guests and pilots that will be presented. And again, once some of these pilots become series and make deals, we will feature the creators on this program as part of our overall commitment to expand diversity on the tube. Kiki, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with having this venture happen in December virtually. We'd love to have it come back in the flesh, if you will, in 2021, and do something here in New York.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, honey. I appreciate your time and all the, you know, your support throughout the years. I really appreciate it. Kiki Kiss, mwah.
You got it, Kiki. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Kiki Melendez joining us live from the Punta Cana Resort in the Dominican Republic this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We're going for our second weekly winner in a row, and we got a nice prize for you. On DVD, the popular movie Crazy Stupid Love, listen to this cast, Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, yes, teamed up, I think this was before La La Land, Julianne Moore, Marissa Tomei, and Kevin Bacon. Great DVD, Blu-ray, digital copy for you of Crazy Stupid Love, critically acclaimed, funny, funny movie, and you can get it if you know the answer to this question. Complete the title of this 1987 CBS made-for-TV movie starring Alan Arkin, Escape, blank, blank. Complete the title of this 1987 CBS made-for-TV movie starring Alan Arkin, Escape, blank, blank. And we need an exact title. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. And who knows, if you have the correct answer, you might be our second weekly winner in a row. If we don't get an answer by the end of today, we'll post the question again tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get involved and all the very best. One more time, here's the question. Complete the title of this 1987, a critically acclaimed CBS made-for-TV movie starring Alan Arkin. Escape, blank, blank. Escape, blank, blank. And we need the title exactly. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Get in the game today and all the very best. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up an episode you missed, make it very, very easy for you. Just go when we get done to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And now you can get some of our episodes at Media Village. The Media Leadership website gives you wonderful commentary, articles, analysis of what's going on TV and the rest of the media world from people like Jack Myers, Charlene Weiser, E.B. Moss, Ed Martin, Jeff Minsky, and a whole cast of thousands. It's www.mediavillage.com. It's one of the new ways you can catch our program on the rebound. When we come back, a tribute to one of the geniuses of directing variety and awards television. But first, this past weekend, All Arts, the public television All Arts service produced for smart TV sets and devices by WAT13 here in New York, put together a very special one-woman show. It's called Until the Flood. You'll meet the person who put it together and performed it, Dale Orlandersmith. She's here from New York. We'll meet her from the Soho District after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunerradio.com, together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget BTR is your home and TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Check it out 24/7, the latest on the pandemic from all around the world, plus special reports, plus podcasts, and other original content. It's coming your way 24/7, the Coronavirus News Channel, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Monday afternoon. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avon with you live from New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour. Purple Pill just joined us in our chat room. So if you have a question or a comment for our final guest of the day, put it in the room. It's SimonApple04. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You catch across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, while the promo is on the air, you connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Put on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. For the last couple of years, we have been covering on a regular basis All Arts. That is the performing arts channel that is presented by WAT Channel 13 and present on smart TV sets and smart TV devices nationwide and also here in New York on linear television channels. Well, over this weekend, a special dramatic presentation was put together called Until the Flood, and it deals with an incident that still reverberates in this country, the 2014 uprising out of Ferguson, Missouri. Joining us live here in New York is the creator and performer of that presentation, Dale Orlandersmith. Dale, thank you so much for coming aboard.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very pleased. Thank you.
How long was Until the Flood in your mind to do?
It wasn't. What happened was St. Louis Repertory Theater approached me because of the unrest, the racial unrest in the city of St. Louis. And what they wanted to do was use theater as a medium to at least create conversation. And prior to Michael Brown's shooting, there were 800-900 black men that were taken aside by police and just either beaten or charged, you know, exorbitant amounts of money for, driving fast or something like that. And the city of St. Louis was divided up to keep racial divide. For instance, I live in Soho. So let's say Soho becomes a city with a mayor, and then you go to the East Village, that's another city with another mayor, to keep money going, to keep money flowing within those cities the way it was divided. What they were doing, one of the things people were doing was charging people with driving very fast. You get charged $100 today, then tomorrow, if you don't have it, it goes up to $200, $300, et cetera, because they needed money to come into those places. So when that happened, the main thing that happened, really, the unrest really came with the Michael Brown shooting. And so I was approached to write this piece to see if people can sit down and talk about how they felt about it, how race affected them, et cetera, and to bring some sort of conversation at least.
As you were writing this, did you think initially you wanted somebody else to perform it, or was it your intention all along, this has got to be something, I have to not just write, but I have to perform on stage?
I mean, I perform in a lot of my own work anyway, and so I was asked both as writer and as actor to do it. I mean, it's written, or anyone can do it. It could be multi-character, single character, any race and or gender can do this. But I was approached as an actor, you know, and writer to do it from St. Louis.
Right. What was your starting point?
I was, I'd never done this before. I was introduced to people. One of the people I was actually introduced to was Michael Brown Sr. and his current wife. He wasn't married to Michael Brown Jr.'s mother legally. They just, you know, they had him. And I wanted to approach it where, because the director and I spoke about this, how does this shooting affect you? Because you can't just play Michael. You can't play Darren Wilson. Darren Wilson was the police officer that shot him. That didn't interest me. I mean, because that's a different can of worms altogether. But I wanted to see how far we've come in terms of race and how do people feel about race? How do they feel about themselves in reference to that? What does this shooting mean in one of the most divided cities within the country? Because I think it's statistically, St. Louis is the third most racially stigmatized city, a separate city in the U.S., the first being Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the number one segregated city within the United States.
How much research, Dale, did you do in preparing for this performance? Did you make a trip out to Ferguson? Did you read a lot of books?
Went to Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, pose this question. Because it's not just simply a matter of right or wrong when you talk about this stuff. Because, again, the way we approach that is these characters are composite figures. I would listen to what somebody said, you know, just let them talk. I would just throw out a question and let them talk. And I'd say, I'm not playing you. I said, I don't do that. I said, a person who does documentary theater and who is a master at it is Anna Deavere Smith. That's what she does. I said, what I'm writing here is a play. I said, I'm just getting a sense of, you know, get a sense of the terrain, how people feel, what it means to them. And I said, but for me to actually play you, that's not what interests me.
Mm-hmm. When you
does that make
do
sense
it,
what I just said to you?
Yeah, absolutely. When you do a one-woman performance, a one-person performance as a play, and there are a lot of ways you can do one-person performances, and a lot of great people, a lot of great talents have done it, from Whoopi Goldberg to John Leguizamo to Hal Holbrook, when he did Mark Twain Tonight, way, way, way back when, Clarence Darrow.
Well, even before
Fonda.
Then, when you had someone like Henry Fonda doing Clarence Darrow, when you had Hal Holbrook, you know, doing Mark Twain, you know, when, you know, the Belle of Amherst, you know, the one-person genre, I mean, I write all kinds of stuff, but the one-person genre is nothing new. I mean, people think that this just started, you know. I mean, when you, Ruth Draper, you know, two centuries ago, you know, and then, you know, and then it came back in the 70s, early 70s, Vivica Lynfers also did it, Vivica. There are shows and there's one-person plays. What I've written is a play. Beginning, middle, end, story, conflict, resolution.
Yeah. What I was wondering is that when you do it as a play, let's say opposed to other formats, do you have structural leeway, let's say, to, on any given night, change the order of the presentation, change, let's say, what character, if you're playing multiple characters, which character comes first or second? How did you approach this?
Well, again, I write multi-character plays and I write single-character plays. I don't really like that distinction as much as it is, because to me it's just theater. And no, like any play, you stick to what's on the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I watched the TV version of Hal Holbrook tonight, and I learned a lot about him. He's one of the great actors to me. And when he did Mark Twain, he was able to research this wide variety of material so that he could, in any given performance, change the order, add things, subtract things. He would get a feel for the audience or get a feel for the reaction to the various Twain writings, so that no one performance was the same, you know, compared to a play like yours or a play like Give 'Em Hell, Harry, what James Whitmore did, or Clarence Darrow, where, as you say, you stick to the script.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but also I'm sure he was sticking to the script. You know, he might have changed the order. He's a wonderful actor. He might have changed the order, but he still stuck with what he had, I would imagine. You know, I mean, maybe he switched up a character, but it still would basically be the same, you know, having the same monologue / dialogue, whatever, you know, within the one-person genre. I mean, recently Val Kilmer had been doing it. But I didn't see it, so I can't really speak on that. But certain people said I was aware of Val Kilmer, like, bringing in modern stuff. Like, he'd mention, you know, as Mark Twain, you know, he might mention Trump or he might mention something like that. And that totally takes out from what that would be about versus, say, what Holbrook did.
We're speaking with Dale Orlando Smith. She is the creator and performer of Until the Flood, which made its premiere over the weekend on All Arts. That's the performing arts channel put together by public television station WNET here in New York. It's available on smart TV sets and smart devices here in New York. It's also available on linear TV channels, both broadcast and multicast. And Dale joins us live from here in New York, the Soho District. Wonderful spot right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised this half hour. Simon Abba, I'm with you live from New York, 50 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us on this Monday afternoon, first of two 90-minute episodes this week of the program all about TV's current and future. And we want you interacting in the conversation, so make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we'll showcase two ventures that may very well be two ventures you will be talking about a lot in 2021. One is called Global Environment Media. It's all about solutions to environmental issues all around the world, and it will happen next year as a smart TV service, later on as a linear TV channel. We'll talk to three of the co-organizers, Christian Moore, Vincent Roger, and Michael Clementi. I know Michael because he used to be at my college, American University, and he's had a great career in broadcast journalism since. Plus, we'll also showcase an interactive TV service that's making the rounds called Seize the Show. We'll talk with David Carpenter. He's the chief executive officer of that venture. If his last name is familiar to some of you who love TV theme songs, he'll tell you why. It's a very exciting connection. And finally, we will have the producer writer and star of Netflix's first new original holiday movie of the season, A New York Christmas Wedding, that premiered last week. His name is Otaja Abit. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So describe the road, Dale, from putting this play together, getting it on stage, and having it on All Arts.
Okay. So we did this play. Michael got shot August 9th, 2014. 2015, I was down there talking to people. 2016, did the piece, did it at, did it in St. Louis, and then, Rattlestick, and then had been traveling with it. And then, of course, the pandemic hit, so we had to stop. But, there's hope, fingers crossed, especially with, this vaccine that we've been reading about recently, very today, that I'll be able to travel with it again. But that's pretty much been it, and the response to it in St. Louis was really strong. I mean, people actually, they were saying, thank you. I'm glad that we can find a way to talk. I mean, again, it's not utopian. I mean, there's no utopia, because if there's a utopia, we'd all be there. But at least it did that, open some sort of conversation. And that's what I want with this piece. I really do.
Yeah. And when did the opportunity to do it for television, when did that happen?
Daniela Topol, who runs Rattlestick Theater, was working on this. She said, I think this would be really good if we could televise this, if we could just not let this go. Because after Michael, then, of course, there was all the stuff that was happening in L.A. And then, the young man, then Henry Louis Gates going into his house and then was mistaken for a thief. And then, of course, now George Floyd. So I think the piece now speaks now more than ever to what's going on. And she said, I really want to keep this going. And I said, okay. And so she began to explore this, looking at, somebody on her board, I think, works for Channel 13, and they saw the piece and they liked it. Thus, that's what we have now.
Yeah. When the production happened, the production crew doing this, did they tape a single performance straight through, or they do, let's say, one or two? Because sometimes when you do a theatrical piece for television and you're taking it right off the production itself, sometimes they will do one production live and then edit it for broadcast, or they will do two or three versions or two or three performances and then do the best of and mix and match.
Well, no, what happened with this, again, because of pandemic, it was actually done, we use the Rattlestick production, because a lot of times theaters, what most theaters do is they tape for archival purposes, so that's what was used.
Yeah. Did you have any input with the producer-director of the TV version in terms of camera angles, how you should be covered, when they should do close-ups of you, when they should do wide shots of you on stage? Any sort of input you're able to have with the producers?
We did the best we could with what we had, which it's pretty good. I mean, I don't like, I'm somebody, honey, who does not like looking at, myself. It's not a beauty pageant, but I was like, no. But it was done as best as it could be done. And, in terms of the important thing is the content and hopefully the performance is strong. And I've been, my friends and other people have been emailing me saying that they, in fact, like it very much. But, no, it's hard to do that, because a lot of times when you're just filming something just for archival purposes, it's not the same as film and or video. I mean, if you're asking me whether my shots are flattering, a lot of the time they're not, but they're not supposed to be, in terms of this, But, no, it's like, oh, my God, do I look like that? And technically I do, but I don't, so, yeah.
Well, when you are taping or filming your work, for posterity, it really is for posterity, not just for the moment. Was there a particular segment or particular sequence that you felt that the TV version got what you wanted and it got the point across in the way you felt was the best way?
It was the best way, and also what we did was what we had on tape pretty much was, in fact, verbatim, because we started with an older character, again, composite figure, and ended with that character, a 70-year-old woman named Louisa. And we started with her because we would see, as she was a young woman in Ferguson, then left Ferguson, came to New York, and then came back to Ferguson. It's like the eternal question with all of the characters are, how I see myself, how have I grown, with this shooting. What does it mean to me? Because the Louisa character is in her 70s, and she can tell you about Martin Luther King. She can tell you about Medgar Evers. She can tell you about Robert Kennedy. Has she gotten over her? What does race mean to her now? She thinks she struggled with it, and now we see her come back again, and she's confused yet again. So she like bookends the thing. No. And in between, we have characters who are just searching, and we're trying to figure out how did this happen? What does this happen? The three fingers pointing back at me, the confusion, mm-hmm. the anger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Until the Flood, it is the new All Arts one-person presentation. It premiered over this weekend, and it will be playing throughout this month and beyond on All Arts. That is the Performing Arts Channel, with performances and other arts material from all over the country, gathered by WAT 13, the public television station here in New York, and presented on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and also here in the New York area on various linear TV channels and multicast channels. We've got the creator and performer of Until the Flood with us. She's based here in New York. That's Dale Olanda Smith, and she's with us for the rest of this half hour right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So in our many minutes with her, you have a question or comment? Don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before the half hour is up, we have a tribute to one of the great directors of live performance and live awards. His name is Walter C. Miller. He passed away this past Friday at the age of 94, and we'll tell you why you ought to know more about him. He's one of the giants of television directing, with an incredible track record to talk about and to celebrate. That's coming up very shortly. What actresses inspire you? You know, particularly when you do a performance like this. When you talked about a moment ago having to deal with the same character at the beginning and the end, who is in her golden years, if you will. It reminded me very briefly of Cicely Tyson doing the autobiography. Did you ever see the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman?
Oh, sure. Of course I saw that. Yeah, I mean, I'm all over the place till it comes. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm all over the place till it comes to, like, what inspires me. I mean, a lot of people do. You know, Jean Moreau inspires me. Cicely Tyson inspires me, you know. Anna Magnani, you know. I mean, I think the work that Whoopi did, you know, that one-person show that she did, I mean, was fabulous. It's eclectic. You know, like, who does what where? Brian Dennehy was a wonderful actor, you know. I mean, it's not just one individual, yeah, per se. And also, I watch a lot of film, and I'm also inspired a lot by music. I have a thing called synesthesia. You know what that is?
No, go ahead. Tell me about it.
Synesthesia okay, here's an example of synesthesia. Like, why is blues music called blue? I get it. It sounds blue to me. It's like when a sound or a word or something where color comes into play, where, you know, why does it sound blue? Or, you know, I want this to sound yellow. I want this to sound, or this looks orange. Or, you know, I mean, even like when we use terms, like in terms of music, like coloratura, that makes sense to me. That's the way I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah. When I think of blues, I think of a sound that is very soulful, that sort of speaks of more than just the surface, if you will. You know,
right, but I also tend to think in colors, right? And I also tend to think of characters, you know? So, like, I might describe a character, I might say that this character is, you know, like Boo Radley meets Keith Richards solo in Stray Cat Blues. I mean, that's the way I think. I mean, that makes total sense to me. You know, I heard a story about Leonard Bernstein where he said, you know, he was on a show with a very famous musician. He goes, you know, I want it to sound orange. And then Leonard Bernstein listened. He goes, it did sound orange. And the person he was talking about was Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching recently on YouTube a scene from Godspell, one of my favorite musicals, the song Day by Day. Every time I hear that song, Day by Day, by Robin Lamont. And by the way, Godspell, if you've never seen the movie version, it's one of the best musicals ever produced in New York. It works so beautifully. But when you hear Day by Day, I think yellow, I think orange, I think sunny, I think bright.
There you go, then you got it.
I think
it.
A clearing.
Right.
And I mentioned Cicely Tyson, Dale, because I remember that movie was so brilliant, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, because
and I can see why you make that connection.
And it has that wonderful scene where she just does the simple act of sipping water at a water fountain that used to be segregated.
And that moment is just incredible because it's like it's like a breakout of emotion just with that action. Not just for her, but for everybody watching that. Incidentally, Cicely won the Peabody Award this year for her body of work, and it was very thrilling to see her get it. You know, this,
and she's how old? 90 what?
Yeah, she's in her like 80s and 90s, and she's
no, she's 90. I think she's like 96. She's like 95, 96. Wow, yeah, I know, right? And vegan. If veganism does that to you, makes you look that great, man, maybe I should turn vegan. I don't know. But she's amazing. Or even, I'm not crazy about the movie The Help, although they've got great actors in there. But she has that scene where, you know, she's fired and she looks through the window, you know, of the house. And it's just like she didn't have to say a word. You could just see. I mean, I love the way she uses silence, because when you were talking about the water scene, it was just still, it was just that one movement. And then in that movie, The Help, the way she looked at the Allison Janney character, just the way she can fill silence. She knows how to do that. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. And another way she did that was in what I thought should have been her Oscar-winning performance in Sounder, when she does that running scene, when she cries Nathan, and that running scene captured brilliantly by John Alonzo with that camera. In one take, by the way.
I know, I read that as well. I read that as well.
Over here.
Yeah, I read that as well. Yeah.
It's one of the great moments. She'll cry like crazy. It's one of the great moments, and I'm still shocked that she never won the Oscar for that film.
I am shocked too.
That she never, because that
never won an Oscar. Never won an Oscar, yeah.
No.
Well, the times they are changing. Let's see what happens, you know?
Absolutely. And again, I'm thrilled she won the Peabody Award. What do you hope that now that we have a television version of your work, which will be played again and again and again, what do you hope people will take, not just at this time when we're dealing with racial division and so forth, but beyond that, and if we can get beyond that, let's say, to a new normal, what do you hope people will take from Until the Flood?
You know, one of the hardest things, whether we care to admit it or not, is that, because I'm not a politician, hopefully I can speak to people, but not for them, we can't. But whether we care to admit it or not, and I couldn't take it to that degree, is where everybody, whether they care to admit it or not, has a racist within them. We have a sexist within us. When we get angry, a lot of times the first thing that comes to mind, if someone is like a certain size or a certain race or a certain sex, we reach for that. How do we take a piece like Flood and on a very simple level look at how it exists within us, and how do we create conversation to reckon with that? Yeah. Maybe many of us won't pick up a gun. Many of us won't, but like in the case of what happened between both those men, and that's also a whole different thing too, because not only do you have the subject of race, we also have a toxic masculinity, and we've not created a space where men could talk about how the way they feel. I mean, it's very complicated, because we're also looking at masculinity within this. You know, there's no place for men to talk about this stuff. And just recently, we're just coming into that now, but truly, no. So you've got the issues of racism, you've got the issues of that kind of toxic masculinity and sexism. So how do we look at those things within us? Look at how it's intergenerational. And can we create a conversation where we stop it? But I think the three fingers first has to be the one, when we have to look at ourselves. So hopefully that can help with that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely does. And before we go, Dale, any TV work coming from you? You're in a place, of course, where a lot of TV is now back to being in production. Will we see
I've
you
never
on the
worked
TV
in television heavily. You know, I've always been I'm a theater person. I would like to do more television and or film, but, you know, I've been blessed with the fact that I work in theater, and I'm one of the few people that make money in theater, you know, and by writing and acting, so I'm very blessed. But sure, I'd like to do more TV and or film. Yeah, be great. And also, I'm also writing a book, so, too, that's cool.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
The name of the play and the name of the television special is called Until the Flood. You can now see it on All Arts. That's the Performing Arts Channel from WHT 13 for public television stations on your local smart TV set or smart TV device. For more details about the program and the service online, All Arts, allarts.org, allarts.org. Here in New York, you also check on linear TV channels and multicast TV channels arranged by WHT 13 New York. Again, the program is Until the Flood. The creator performer, Dale Orlando Smith, thank you so much for joining us. All the very best to you in whichever pursuit you pursue, theater or television. Thank you for putting this play together, and thank you for a wonderful discussion. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You have a great afternoon, yes?
You too, and a wonderful week ahead. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Dale Orlando Smith from Until the Flood on All Arts, joining us live here in New York. If you like awards programming, whether it's the Tony Awards, the Grammy Awards, or the Country Music Association Awards just recently on ABC, there's somebody you ought to thank who passed away this past Friday. His name is Walter C. Miller. Walter C. Miller gained a reputation as one of the great variety show and award show directors. He did them all, and he did them great. He worked with some of the finest talent all over the place, from Frank Sinatra to Barbara Streisand. He even did the TV version of the off-Broadway, then Broadway sensation, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, for NBC. I still remember that with Wendell Burton in the lead role as Charlie Brown, Skip Hinton, and other wonderful actors in a terrific production for television. Walter Miller was someone who loved being around great talent and getting them at their best. He directed many a Tony Awards. He directed many a Grammy Awards. And in recent years, directed many a CMA award show. In fact, his reputation was so great and his quality and craftsmanship so great that he won 19 Emmy nominations in the course of his career and won 5 of them along the way. The executive producer of the CMA Awards said that when he passed at the age of 94 on Friday from undisclosed causes, that Walter Miller taught him everything about how to do an award show, and that of all the award shows he did, Miller thought CMA was really the heart and soul of his work. And luckily, thanks to YouTube, we will have a great repository of his wonderful work over the years. And I hope you get a chance to see it. You will see live variety television at its very, very finest. Condolences to Walter's family and his many, many friends and TV industry followers. Walter Miller, one of the greatest in the craft of live TV directing, dead at the age of 94. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks to all of our guests. Don't forget to be with us on Friday when we'll take a look at 2 channels that will be coming your way in 2021, Global Environment Media and Seize the Show. And we'll also have the producer, writer, and star of the new Netflix drama, A New York Christmas Wedding, Ojata Abit. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. In the meantime, check out our recent episodes at blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also, you can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. I'd love to hear what you thought about today's episode, your thoughts about TV's current and future. Why? Because we do respond to what you have to say, no matter what the medium is, and what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and those distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin, Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonberg, the head of content, and the co-founders, Alan Levy and Bob Chowrish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. It makes a wonderful holiday season gift for you or someone you know. For 1 or 2 free audio books, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And let's lift this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.